welcome to the £1 Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Wayne, and this is episode 25. If you're not sure what this is, if you blindly wandered through the vast array of movie podcasts that are out there on the internet, well, basically, it's just about finding a film for a pound or less and seeing if it's any good. You know, you go out to charity shops, car boots, yard sales, anywhere you can pick a DVD up for a pound or less, and it could be anything, as this show has proved time and time again, to be honest. If you're new, welcome along. If you're returning, glad to have you back. Like I said, this is episode 25, and on episode 25, we'll be discussing and talking about and watching 2005's Bogeyman.
For 15 years, everybody told me I was making it up. Everyone said it's just a story. There's no such thing as the Bogeyman.
But I was right.
Listen to me, Tim. It's time to grow up.
Nothing supernatural happened.
Hey, you're not getting weird on me again, are you?
No.
These feelings you're having?
I'm seeing things, Jess.
They're going to get worse unless you face this. Go home, Tim. Spend one night in that house. It will help. You okay?
It's just hard being back.
It takes a while. You'll be all right.
You want to tell me why you're following me around?
I wanted to ask you something. Is it true the Bogeyman took your dad? Are you scared?
When you're afraid, close your eyes and count to five. Sometimes it works for me. One.
What happens when you get to six? He's waiting for you.
Right, so Bogeyman from 2005, directed by Stephen Kay, starring Barry Watson, Emily Deschanel, Sky McCall Bartusiak. Has an IMDb score of 4.2 out of 10, a Rotten Tomatoes score of 13%, has a budget of 20 million, gross worldwide of 67.2 million, and it runs at 89 minutes. It is a 15 certificate, cost me the princely sum of 33.3 pence, as it was three for a pound out of a charity shop. I read you the DVD synopsis now, straight from the back of the DVD, obviously. Every culture has one. The horrible monster fueling young children's nightmares. But for Tim, the Bogeyman still lives. But for Tim, the Bogeyman still lives in his memories, as a creature that devoured his father 16 years earlier. Is the Bogeyman real? Or did Tim make him up to explain why his father abandoned his family? The answer lies hidden behind every dark corner and half-open closet of his childhood house. A place he must return to and face the chilling question. Does the Bogeyman really exist? I hope I tried to put, a bit of, you know, silly gravitas into that, or silly, you know, trailer voice. Hope it come across all right. A bit of background on the film. I couldn't really find much on the on this, to be honest. It's distributed by Sony Pictures and spawned two sequels that were straight to video. It was Bogeyman 2 in 2007 and Bogeyman 3 in 2008. We'll talk about director Stephen Kay now. Director Stephen Kay is New Zealand-born. He has 34 director's credits to his name, including Stallone's Get Carter, Cell 213, and Isolation, and lots of TV work, including Sons of Anarchy, Friday Night Lights, Quantico, loads and loads of stuff like that. He's also an actor, and he turned up in Murder, She Wrote, Lethal Weapon, and he had a long-running part in America's sitcom. I don't think it's a sitcom, it's a soap opera. American soap opera, General Hospital. He is married to Piper, I think it's Perabo, who played Violet in Coyote Ugly. We've got Barry Watson now, who plays Tim in the film. He's one of four siblings, originally from Michigan. He has 42 actor credits to his name, including When Strangers Appear, Sorority Boys, Search Engines, and lots of TV and TV movies and things like that, from Nash Bridges right the way through to the Santa Con. He just turns up in all those things. His first acting job was on Days of Our Lives, and the part he had lasted for 6 months while he was on there. And Tori Spelling, of the Spelling family, obviously, and Beverly Hills 90210, introduced him to his wife, Laura Payne Gariel. Emily Deschanel now, she plays Kate in the film. She's obviously the sister of Zooey Deschanel and is probably most recognisable as Dr. Temperance Brennan from TV series Bones. Her father is Caleb Deschanel. He's a cinematographer and director. He was a cinematographer of The Right Stuff and the director of The Escape Artist. Emily Deschanel's other actor credits include voice work on American Dad, My Sister's Keeper, and Cold Mountain. We're looking for a critical response to this film now. So efilmcritic.com, Scott Weinberg, said he gave this one star. Scott Weinberg and Drew McWeeney do a fantastic podcast that doesn't run anymore now, to be honest, but it was brilliant what it lasted, which was 80s all over. So Scott Weinberg knows what he's talking about. Scott Weinberg said, one of the year's worst horror movies, about as terrifying as tuna fish on white toast. Empire Online, William Thomas gave this 2 stars and said, an opportunity to exploit childhood nocturnal fears is missed in a second-rate horror. See Monsters, Inc. instead. And we're going to say Letterboxd now. Letterboxd overall on this gives it 1.8. In the reviews, and we get the Keenanaut, he gave this one star and said, the only real Bogeyman you should be afraid of with this one is boredom. And Josh Brown, who's also on Letterboxd, gave this 0.5 star and said, there's so many films I haven't seen, Seven Samurai, North by Northwest, Wages of Fear, and I've just watched this. It's not fun, I don't know why I do it. This is nothing, life is finite. Two fantastically, well, awful reviews of this so far. We'll move on to the expectation of this film now. I was vaguely aware of this when it was released, I think I knew of its sequels as well through like DVDs, like HMV and things like that. And you always see it in, ironically, in charity shops and things like that. But nothing about the quality of it, to be honest. I'm guessing it's going to have a sort of urban legend, you know, Bloody Mary, Candyman, you know, say my name 3 times. Sort of thing, you know, say my name 3 times while gargling water under a full moon while driving backwards, you know, on a country road. You know, the old silliness. Lots of jump scares, quite, you know, the quiet bang moments, and there's going to be a silly spectre in there, you know, he likes to open doors slowly, you know, and there'll be lingering shots of hallways and stuff like that. I'm expecting a silly premise, and with no real reason why it's happening, you know, it's just he's picked on this kid and that's it. Normally when they push a somebody presents, it means the studio has no faith in it whatsoever, and Sam Raimi's name is all over this film. It's everywhere you look, and it's just a, you know, I think he only produced the film. I don't think he had anything else to do with the other production, you know, the writing or anything else. So it's it's going to be a funny one. So we're going to break now after I'll give you the expectation. If you didn't know this, we haven't watched the film at this moment in time, so we're going to break now, have an intermission, and I'm going to go watch the film. So here's the intermission. Back from watching the film. Quick one, if you intend on watching 2005's Bogeyman, we're going to talk about the whole plot in a second. It's spoilers all the way from here on in. I'm going to spoil the whole film. So if you do want to watch Bogeyman or you haven't seen Bogeyman, you do intend on watching it, pause it right now, go watch the film, come back. I shall be waiting and you can agree or disagree with everything I say. But you have been warned, so here we go. My initial reaction to this, it's plotless, it's pointless, it's nonsensical silliness. It's cliched to death. I mean, there's nonsense jump scares all the way through. A lead actor who doesn't know what he's doing, let's be honest. There's nothing. It's non-consequential. There was no point where I thought. There was a point in the second half of the film where I thought, oh, this is going to take an interesting turn, but it didn't. So we'll get to that. So here comes the plot. Let's break this all down. We start in this big farmhouse at night, and there's a thunderstorm. And there's a young boy in bed struggling to sleep. Well, yeah, it's a thunderstorm. You're not going to be able to sleep, are you? And he all the windows are open. The curtains are blowing everywhere. It's the middle of the thunderstorm. I try closing the windows. That's the first thing. Why is your windows open? He's only a he's only like about 7 years old or something. Anyway, in the dark, everything is scaring him. You know, there's a figure, which is, I mean, this figure is absolutely frightening anyway, this little like action figure. His dressing gown that actually turns into like a scary thing but disappears when he shines a light on it. It's so, like I say, it's cliche. There's an entity in the room though, when it ruffles under the curtains, and there's a then on the bed, and then it, you know, he starts to blow the lamp over, and then the closet door opens. The kid pulls his covers over his head because, you know, that's going to stop everything. We all know this; it's a universal truth. You pull the covers over your head, nothing's going to get to you. They are. It's like a towel in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's just going to stop everything. And then this figure reaches for him. And you're like, oh, but it turns out it's his dad. Dad reassures him, you know, he looks under the bed, in the curtains and the shutters, blah, 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 in the closet. And then the bogeyman takes his dad. He throws him round like a rag doll before dragging him off into the closet. Dun, dun, 15 years later. Straight away, no faffing about, his dad's dead 15 years later. We see the little boy has grown up into a man called Tim. That's right. I am a wizard called Tim. He has there's a party going on for a magazine he works at with his girlfriend, and we see Tim is still absolutely crippled by an open closet, but he looks... I didn't get this, because he looks like he's well-rounded and he's successful, and he works at this magazine, I think he's a photographer, but he's still frightened to death of open closets. So, okay. So with this previous scene still in mind, open closet, you know, darkness, paranoia, all that sort of stuff, he walks home through a park... at night, in the dark, in a scene, to be fair, this is one of those scenes, it should have been cut, it amounted to nothing, and this park was absolutely heaving, by the way, like 10 o'clock at night, it was crazy, in the middle, you know, pitch black. Anyway, he gets to his apartment, and we see he's still crippled by dark spaces, and all the closets have no doors on them, and all his kitchen stuff, and, you know, his fridge is see-through, it's a glass door, and all the doors on his... all the cupboard doors in his kitchen, they've all been taken off, so there's no place, you know, this thing can't hide anywhere. And he goes to see his girlfriend, he goes to his girlfriend's house to meet her parents for the first time, who are, they're just stereotypical upper-class white arseholes. That's exactly what they are. They're just, it's just common denominator white person, that's it, you know, with money, in a film where they just... they've got to be arseholes. And to be fair, for a man who's absolutely petrified of the dark, he spends a lot of time in the dark. You know, he walks around, like, you know, dimming lights, and walks around in lots of dimly lit places. At bedtime, he sits on the edge of the bed and stares at an ajar door. He sleeps with the lights on. Well, I guess you would. And his girlfriend comes in and gets into bed with him. Only he's having a nightmare about his mom going to bed with him and being like a creepy dead zombie sort of thing, rigged and all that. Yeah, horribleness. He wakes up and instantly thinks something has happened to his mom. His girlfriend is completely inconsiderate and tells him to calm down.
Tim, baby, what are you doing on the floor? Tim, what is it?
Jessica. Oh God, I had the most messed up dream.
What was it?
I gotta go see my mom.
Wait.
There's something wrong.
What?
I know it.
Tim, no. Hey, no, listen. Let's get back in bed and...
No, where's
Tim,
my phone?
What is wrong with you? God.
Where's my phone?
Shh. Just leave it.
Hello? Hey, Uncle Mike. I got your message.
Hey.
Is everything okay? I'm gonna come see my mom.
I thought you were gonna stay here for the weekend.
He then gets a call in the middle of the night to this house that nobody knows where he's staying, but we don't know what happened. He doesn't say, but we cut to a funeral home, so I'm guessing his mom had died, and he was having this is never made clear either, about his psychic ability, or, you know, he dreams that his mom's dead, and he's, yeah, it's never made clear. For no clear reason, he goes to his this children's psychiatric ward of the hospital where his mom's been, like, in the mortuary. And he was in there as a kid. He goes looking for stuff from when he was a kid, and the staff just leave him to it. Honestly, I think I rewound this scene and went, I don't really understand what the fuck just happened here. He just wanders around this, you know, And he said it's like a kid's psychiatric ward as well. And then he just roams he roams around the halls, and then he comes across this little girl who is screaming at a mislaid ceiling tile. I'm just guessing she couldn't take the break in the feng shui in the room. Anyway, Mom's funeral turns up, and Tim has a vision, and they bury her. Tim talks to his uncle and says he's going to stop at the old house, and he sees Kate, who's an old friend, obviously Zooey Deschanel. Tim drives through town, and at this point I honestly thought the film had turned into a parody of itself, or just a parody. There was people staring, there's kids in slow-mo, you know, there's backwards on roller skates. It's almost like a scary movie, a scary movie film, an absolute parody of what a scary movie... Obviously, they're sending up films like this. Anyway, on the back roads to his house, a crow flies straight into his windscreen, and he narrowly misses a truck. No clue about this scene at all. I don't know what purpose it serves, and I don't know why he's building into the narrative or anything. It's just a crow flying into a windscreen, he nearly hits a truck. That's it. Could be cut, means nothing to the plot at all. Anyway, gets to the old house that's a bit run down, and... it's definitely in need of a gardener, let's put it that way. The camera whizzes round the dark house, you know, billowing plastic, decorating sheets, slow motion of dripping taps. Oh, it flies upstairs, and there's a, you know, this is all going for atmosphere, but it just comes across as absolutely fucking stupid. I made an assumption that the bogeyman only haunts where Tim is at this point, because that seems to be what it is. And then we get this. He has a memory flashback of his mum, who is played by Lucy Lawless. He sees his mum and dad argue about Tim and him being afraid of the dark. Tim goes upstairs and has flashing images of ghostly things. Out of the window, he sees Kate approach on horseback, which subsequently bucks her off when she gets close to the house. He goes out to help, and they go into the house to get ice, and they catch up on childhood things. Tim's girlfriend is absolutely non-existent, by the way, at this point. She didn't come to the funeral. We haven't seen her apart from, like, two scenes, and that's it. He's just got a girlfriend, people, apparently. Kate leaves the house anyway later on and tells him she'll be back later and she'll be bringing some food for him. She leaves without taking the horse. By the way, the horse, you just fucking left to wander. I don't know where it is. Tim wanders around the house, and there's, like, blurred camera work and crap, silly, nothing jump scares. He then gets himself locked in a closet and scratches his face with a coat hanger. Or did he? No, he did. It was a fucking coat hanger, I saw it. He finds it hilarious that he scared himself. Then the sun goes down and there's a bump and a bang from the old garage. And for a man who's frightened to death of the dark, people, he gets a flashlight and investigates the bump and the bang in the fucking garage. Now, I don't investigate a bump in the bang in the middle of the night in my goddamn house, let alone in a garage. So he goes in, and it's a young girl hiding there, and he asks her what she's doing there. He tells her there's no such thing as the bogeyman, and when she's scared, she should count to five. And she replies, "What happens if you get to six?" And he replies with silence. Doesn't say a fucking word. Very reassuring to kids is our Tim. She leaves. Tim finds she's forgotten her bag, which is full of lost children posters from, like, fucking all over the town. As he's looking through these posters, they build suspense in the house, like there's a bit of wind, there's mood lighting, you know. Then he's surrounded by all these, like, little ghost kids. They just appear. And he does the sensible thing and runs... And he runs straight out the house as the closet door opens and you hear all the children scream. And he runs out the door and straight into his girlfriend at this point, who's turned up now. And once again, she calms him down and they go off to stay in a motel because fucking the house is scary as all fuck. The girlfriend is just as understandable as she was before. She goes to have a bath and while Tim goes to get some ice. Of course, we've all forgot about Kate turning up and bringing in food. So Kate's brought some food to the house, like she said she would, and goes into the house to put the food away. Tim goes to see Jessica. That's his girlfriend, by the way. I finally found out her name. In the bathroom, but she's gone. There's no sign of her. And Kate starts looking around. And we flick to Kate, who starts looking around the house. And there's some awful quick cuts and slow-mo. You know, Tim heads for the motel closet at the same time Kate does the same thing at the house. And then Tim comes out the closet of the house, his old house. Tim is confused, and so am I. I have no clue. I'm not sure of the mechanics of this. I have no fucking clue what's just happened. He sort of runs into the closet and sort of, it feels like it's a Narnia type moment. He sort of disappears into the closet. Anyway, Tim uses his car to drive to the motel with Kate in tow. He tells Kate he doesn't know where he's been. He goes to the motel room and discovers a key in his pocket. So if the mechanics of this scene, so this is what I was saying about, I made some assumptions and I thought he was going to take a turn. So he wanders into this closet and then appears at the house, and his fucking car's at the house. So if that's right, then he's driven to the house at some point and left the motel. He hasn't sort of fucking wandered through this netherworld of closets. So, yeah, but it's, yeah, unfortunately, people, it's not that. It's not as clever as that. Anyway, he goes into the room because he's got this motel key, and the room is exactly as he's left it. Kate goes to the bathroom, and there's all blood and handprints on the bath. He says he's right. He doesn't want to be, but he is. There's a bogeyman after all. The film, whether intentional or not, is portraying Tim as the killer. Now, this is what I was saying. I did actually think at this point that Tim is the killer. He's done all these things and he's invented this bogeyman to deal with the trauma of being this fucking horrible killer. Kate tells him, you're sick and you need help. And she goes home and she tells him to go home or I'll call the cops. The cops? Or she'll call the cops. You know, please do. Just fucking phone the police for fuck's sake. Anyway, there's a shadow in one of Kate's windows and Tim goes mad and Kate tells him to piss off. You know, go, off you go. He heads for the house again, very sure that Jessica has been snatched by the bogeyman. He sees little Franny, who is sitting on a swing. That's the little girl he found in the garage, in his garage. And she's sitting on this swing all alone in the dark. Again, in the dark. And she, too, is shit scared of the bogeyman. Tim asks the little girl for help. Kate calls Tim's uncle. This is all going on at the same time. So Tim asks the little girl for help. And Kate calls Tim's uncle and says she's worried and, you know, he needs help. And as she's doing this, there's a bump on the stairs, you know, and he's like, oh, what's going on? Tim asks Franny, the little girl, how to stop the bogeyman. And she says, fuck no, I'm only 10. They go into a creepy house. Now, I had to rewind this because apparently he knows his house. So to be clear, after losing his girlfriend, scaring off his only friend, Tim leads a traumatised 10-year-old girl into a scary murder house in the middle of the night and says they might be suffering from extreme anxiety. That's what he says, people, to a 10-year-old girl. I mean, what's this 10-year-old girl doing out? And anyway, turns out Tim used to know the man who lived there and his daughter was taken. They enter the scary house and there's writing all over the walls and the man was trying to name it. There's a chair bolted to the floor where the old man used to sit and tie himself to the chair and wait for the bogeyman. And then we have the bombshell of Franny, who is this man's daughter, who went missing. So, you know, it turns out Franny's a ghost. Helping Tim, apparently. Okay. Tim's uncle turns up at the house looking for Tim. Tim returns home, but uncle is nowhere to be seen.
Uncle Mike? Uncle Mike? Uncle Mike?
And then there's a montage of, you know, the whole A-team, you know, he's barring all the interior, you know, the doors are bolted, the windows, all bar one, you know, he screws a chair to the floor, just like this old man in his old childhood bedroom facing the closet. And then bogeyman blows all the wood off the doors and everything, you know, all the work that Tim's just put in, it's nothing, the bogeyman just blows it off. The closet open up and Franny appears. He's waiting for you, she tells Tim. Tim goes into the closet and ends up in the motel closet. He goes to the bathroom and a tap turns on and starts pumping out tar Jessica jumps out and she struggles with the tar. And a demon, and they're struggling. It's Jessica in this sort of demon form tar thing, and it pulls her into the closet. Tim gives chase and he's back in the house again, where the uncle is firing a nail gun, and a black ghoul wraps him in cellophane and then drags him into the closet. Tim continues his chase, and you've guessed it, he finds himself at Kate's house, and she's about to be attacked by the bogeyman, but Tim saves her, and Kate sees it too. They see the bogeyman, this terrible fucking CGI monster on the stairs, and it really is terrible. And it drags Kate under the bed, and Tim hangs on, and then they both go, and then they emerge in Tim's bedroom. But the bogeyman manifests a sort of electricity and with birds and stuff, and there's lots of jump cuts with all like awful CGI. And Tim has a memory of the action figure from the start of the film, the one that scared him as a kid, and it turns out it's an effigy of the bogeyman. So he gets it out of one of the drawers, and I guess it's been there for like 20 years. It just sat there. It's just sitting there, just waiting. And he breaks it, and everything starts to get sucked back into the closet. All the furniture, everything. But not Tim and Kate. Not them pair, no. And what about Uncle and Jessica? Apparently, it's over, and he won't be coming back. Wow. Then we get this awful grunge rock song, Falling Home by Noiseheads.
He's not coming back.
And then, the end. Right, let's sum this up and react to this. It's an absolute fucking mess, this film. It really is. Everything about this film doesn't work. The plot is just ridiculous. There's so little character development, there's no jeopardy. It sort of just jumps from one scene to the other. It starts off like he's scared and he's, you know, lost his dad and all this, and nothing. You know, Tim looks just bemused throughout the whole film. He never looks scared. You know, he's meant to be suffering from PTSD. I didn't get that he was suffering from PTSD at all. It's like every time, every opportunity he got to walk into a dark area, he did. You know, it's just bad writing. I'm going to walk home through the park. It's dark. I'm going anyway. Fuck it. Oh, there's a dark house over there. I'm over the ghost girl. What am I going to do? Straight in through the front door. No pissing about. You know, PTSD my arse. I'm just going to plow straight through it. Whatever. Let's talk about Jessica and Tim's uncle, because they must die, but it's never really mentioned. They just sort of go, oh, he's gone. The bogeyman's gone. So that's it. We're done. That's it. We can just move on. I mean, nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit at all. And we talk about the plot, the twisty-turny plot. It thinks it's cerebral and twisty and clever, and it's just confusing and idiotic. I really didn't get it at all. It's like, you know, he goes into this cupboard and comes out the other side. I really thought the twist was going to be that he wasn't a bogeyman at all. He's just projecting. He's having a mental breakdown with something that happened in his childhood. And he's killing these people, and he is the bogeyman, and he's the thing that lurks in the dark. But he just doesn't realise it. You know, he sort of like zones out or something and wakes up in all these other places. So every time he goes into a closet or in a dark space, instead of freaking out and seeing something, he just sort of blanks out and becomes this other person. And I just thought, well, that's quite interesting. That'd make a decent film. But it wasn't that at all. It was just fucking stupidness. It was just bad CGI fucking monster. And it was just horrendous. And it sets up loads and loads and loads of questions and never answers a single one. He just sets up a question and moves on to the next one. Doesn't bother with any of that. In this film, you've got childhood trauma, cerebral amnesia type plot, ghosts, obviously the epitable bogeyman, and all of this is just for no reason. You know, it's just there. They're just like, they must have thrown it all in a blender and that's what they got out. There's so many strands of this film they must have thought were really cool. And they're just plain dumb. They're not, I mean, that's the biggest thing in this. This is the bogeyman. This is the thing, like it says in the synopsis, every culture has a bogeyman. Everybody in the world has something, you know, in every country there is something that frightens little kids. You know, that the sort of is a playground story that kids tell or they kill kids to scare them a little bit. You know, everybody has an urban legend. And this was, what are you talking about, this film? It's not frightening at all. It's just dumb and boring. It's going for atmosphere, but it doesn't project any atmosphere. And I didn't get any of it at all. It's just boring. That's the thing. I mean, the bogeyman CGI is some really, really awful, awful CGI. And his design, it looks half finished, his design. It looks like, you know, they got an idea with it, put it in. It looks like test footage. That's what it looks like. Like, this is what we've got. We've got to go with this because we've run out of money. Yeah, that'll do. It's Friday afternoon. Chuck it in the film. No worries. Talk about... I'm just going back here, people, in my book. 20 million, the budget is on this. Now, think about this. I know Blair Witch isn't for everybody. I personally think the Blair Witch is a fantastic feat of ingenuity, film-wise. And it cost $27,000 to make, the Blair Witch. And grossed God knows how much. And it was, at times, I found it quite genuinely, you know, unsettling and unnerving. This was just... I watched this on an evening as well to try and get a bit of atmosphere. And I was just bored. You know, I'm making notes at the same time and trying to get the plot down. And I was just like, I don't care. You know, I can't wait for it to be over. I mean, it's a saving grace. It's 89 minutes. It could... If you cut some of the scenes out of this, you could get this down to, like, 75 easily. It's not one of the best films I've watched for the podcast, to be honest. It's easily one of the worst. I think because it's just stupid. It doesn't obey its own logic. Anyway, we'll move on to the verdict, as if you didn't already guess.
Gentlemen of the jury, reads the verdict.
Considering all the facts and arguments presented by both counsel, and after careful deliberation...
The jury will retire and consider the evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
Right then, so the verdict of this film, this film, I paid 33 pence for it, and I think I was robbed 23 pence of it. I paid 10 pence for this film, and that's it. And that's just to, you know, put it on the shelf, and it doesn't go to landfill. That's pretty much all I can only say about it. It's an absolute sleeping pill. This film makes no sense. And you find yourself going back across the plot to try and, like I say, I stopped this film and rewound it 3 or 4 times to try and get to the point that I missed. Like, oh, I think I've missed a bit. I need to go back and see why this is happening or why this is happening. You know, perhaps I was writing a note down and I missed it. I didn't miss anything. It's just fucking stupid. It's an idea. I feel like they sat around and went, we want to make a scary film. But it's unfinished. Everything about this film and the idea of this film is unfinished. At best, it's confusing. And at worst, it's just boring and offensive. And like I said before, $20 million, people, on this. On what exactly? I don't know where the budget went on this at all. So yeah, 10 pence out of a pound for this film and no more. I promise you on that. That's the end of this episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly didn't enjoy the film, but I've enjoyed recording this episode. Like I say, this is episode 25. There's 24 more episodes to go out there and have a listen to. And if you do come back and listen to this podcast all the time, thank you so much for coming back and listening to it. This is only a little project for me. So yeah, that's episode 25 all wrapped up. That was The Bogeyman. Please follow me on Twitter. And you know all that jazz, and I'm not going to keep saying it. If you found the podcast and you've listened, thank you very much, because I didn't think I'd get anybody listening. So thank you for listening. And with that in mind, I've been Wayne, and this has been the £1 Movie Podcast. See you again soon. Bye-bye.